this week on Timey-Wimey TV, Christopher Eccleston commits to the anniversary special.
And I guess it all worked out in the end.
And Liz and Rudy get their minds robbed by Patrick Troughton as a doctor.
Stupidest, craziest thing ever.
Hey there, Internet! It's Liz Shannon Miller at Lizon on the Twitters.
And I'm Rudy Jashan at Rudy on Twitter, and you're listening to Timey-Wimey TV, our show about our favorite space-time adventurer and all things time travel related.
Yes, you are definitely listening to this show right now.
Yes.
It is not a mystery. It is not an illusion. It is happening. You just have to kind of roll with it.
That will actually probably tie into our later discussion. We're going through the classic doctors.
We're going through the classic doctors.
And even the modern doctors as we count down to the 50th anniversary special. And so later in this episode, we'll be discussing the second doctor, only available in the U.S. legally, episode, The Mind Robbers.
The Mind Robber.
But first, let's go to news.
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 So what's news?
What's news? Well, our good friend Matt sent us a confirmation of the thing that you told me about last time that I was like, oh no, I don't want to believe that. But it apparently is true that IDW confirms through like a comic book, a couple of pages of the comic book, that the upcoming, in the upcoming 50th anniversary special, we will be treated by John Hurt as not the doctor, and that doctor, not the doctor is in fact the doctor, is a incarnation of the doctor in between 8 and 9.
That's right. I am vindicated. Let's all celebrate my victory.
I mean, your victory is stupid, and I hate it.
You know who to write to in that case. Dear Mr. Moffat, I hate to bother you again, my internet piñata, but still.
We'll never get old.
Yeah, basically, it's showing the panels that reveal it. It's just it's during the Great Time War, and some people on Gallifrey are running around, and someone suggests maybe the Doctor, and he's like, and they say he's not by that name anymore. He's chosen another name for this incarnation.
Yeah,
blah 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 blah.
What I find really interesting is the fact that it does really seem like whatever is going to happen is going to really focus on the Time War, which is, I think I've said it on this podcast before, is something that I didn't expect Moffat to ever really get into, just because it's such a Davies era thing.
Right, but in some ways, if the 50th anniversary is going to celebrate everything, and the Time War is the big break between those two eras, it kind of has to be covered. Whether it's covered well is something we shall see.
Yes, I'm looking forward to, we should figure out our plans, because I think something we haven't necessarily talked about on this podcast is the fact that they're going to simulcast it. It's like, it is going to air at the same time in America that it airs in Britain.
Yep.
So that means pajama party for us, I think. I mean, it'll be like 11 o'clock in the morning, which
I think it's 12 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, yeah, so
unless it's after daylight saving time?
Who knows?
Math is hard.
Timey-wimey.
Yes.
But we should plan to watch it together, and then also plan to get people together for a round table, because I'm sure there'll be plenty of round table potential in whatever gets aired.
Now, something that I wanted to add in here that tied to this idea of like the 12 incarnations is, you know, something that's been brought up is they're only supposed to allow to reincarnate.
Yeah, but he has been very blunt about, Moffat has been very blunt about the fact that as soon as he needs to figure out a way around it, he will figure out a way around it.
Except, he definitely said like he'll figure it out, because they actually had a conference recently that he was attending in Edinburgh, at Edinburgh Fringe Festival.
Right.
And it came up in conversation, and basically he was asked by the moderator, like, do you acknowledge the convention that the Doctor can only regenerate 12 times? And Stephen Moffat goes, yes. And then he refused to answer any more questions related to it.
He has. There's some, like, terrible scene he's already got written. That explains everything. Speaking of things that are Doctor Who related, that was not a promising segue. I apologize.
It's, you gotta get back on the segue.
I'm
the segue bicycle. Get back on the segue.
The segue.
Yeah. You can be better at it.
Yes, but, I do want to bring up so as we've discussed before, the dump truck of money that it would take for Christopher Eccleston to be in the 50th anniversary special did not arrive at Christopher Eccleston's house, and thus Christopher Eccleston will not be in the 50th anniversary special.
It somehow got diverted to John Hurt's place.
Yeah.
And I guess it all worked out in the end.
So weird. But Eccleston, in one of the run-up celebration things to the 50th anniversary, Eccleston did give a statement to the BFI, which the British Film Institute, about his time on the show, and specifically calling out his affection for director Joe Ahearne.
Yeah.
I do not know if that's correctly pronounced, but he did say, "I love the BFI, I love the Doctor, and hope you enjoy this presentation. Joe Ahearne directed 5 of the 13 episodes of the first series. He understood the tone the show needed. Strong, bold, pacey visuals coupled with wit, warmth, and a twinkle in the performances, Mrs." Okay, Mrs., I don't understand that. "If Joe agrees to direct the 100th anniversary special, I will bring my Sonic in a stairlift, and provided the Daleks don't bring theirs, I, the Ninth Doctor, vow to save the universe and all you apes in it."
Hey,
which,
it's the closest thing to acknowledging he kind of liked being part of the show.
Yay! And I honestly, it kind of warms my heart to hear him call us apes.
Right.
That was always a part of Doctor Who I really enjoyed.
Right.
And it
was glad to hear that. And of course, he clearly is stating that, on the other hand, I will never be involved with the show again.
Yes, I will be dead.
Yeah. I will be dead before I show up again.
I mean,
unless,
yeah.
He means like a CGI animated Doctor, which is probably what everything will be like in the future.
That is what everything will be like in the future. I am, for one, am terrified of the future.
Why do you watch Continuum?
Because it's good! Shut up! She has a super suit! Rudy will someday watch Continuum, you guys, and he's gonna like it.
I have it on my Netflix. Well, I was gonna say,
Q, it's not Q anymore.
No, it's my list.
Because they want to confuse us.
It's my list on my list. I promised this show that I would watch it
someday. One day.
In the future.
For the 100th anniversary episode.
Yes, on the 100th anniversary episode of Continuum, I will watch it. Carrying on.
You're going to be dead by then. I'm going to be glad. That's what you get for not liking Continuum.
Okay.
continuing on, I've been reading books because I'm very literate and learned. And
What's that like?
It's fun. It's interesting. You read more than I do.
Not very well, though.
Yeah, true.
The long words, they trip me up.
But I've been reading this new book called Life After Life, which I haven't finished yet, but it's a very interesting novel in terms of, it's not explicitly time travel, but it does deal with like the idea of alternate lives and parallel universes to some extent. And it's also super focused on Hitler. With only the minorest amount of spoilers, I will say that the opening scene involves our heroine walking into a cafe in 1939 and shooting Hitler.
Wow.
And
so
then
it's a classic.
Yeah. But then like a whole bunch of different things happen.
Right.
Like it's basically a really interesting book. It's a bit of a challenge to read because you're constantly flipping between all these universes and you're there's a lot of catch up that has to happen. But if you like historical fiction and you like the idea of playing with universes, like this is, it's a really interesting read. So that's Life After Life, Kate Atkinson. We'll have a link in the thing.
I am still lagging in my duties reading up on the Puffin.
Oh, yeah.
Universe books.
Yeah.
The Eighth Doctor book is...
It would be August, so yes, yeah. The Eighth Doctor should be nigh.
Yeah, it's out now, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to catch up. It's just, wow, that Sixth Doctor just can't go through it.
Colin Baker, man, like...
I finished it.
Okay.
I give my review of it.
What is your review of it?
It was silly.
Silly.
It was silly. It was the entire plot is the Doctor... And I can't remember his companion at the time, who's an American, go to the Las Vegas planet, which the last time anyone went to a Las Vegas planet, which was Battlestar, in its second episode, original classic Battlestar in second episode, which basically destroyed the show from there on in.
Well, they went to, there's a Las Vegas satellite in the space above and beyond, which I recently just had a bit of a rewatch
of. Which is a great show, except for the Las Vegas satellite.
Well, that Las Vegas satellite is funny in that episode, because for the following two reasons. One, it is the year 1995, so the host is played by Coolio.
Wow.
And it is a big deal. It's like, and starring Coolio. Yes, and then also David Duchovny plays a sexy pool-playing robot, and it is the best thing that's ever happened.
I must have actually missed this episode.
Oh my god, it's hilarious.
I love Space and Above and Beyond. I actually wish it had lasted longer than it did.
Yeah, it's an interesting show.
For the time, it was very interesting.
The things it's doing are actually pretty groundbreaking. By groundbreaking, I mean, of course, it was ahead of its time and no one watched it.
Yes. Hence, there are only 13 episodes.
But the important thing is that David Duchovny plays a pool-playing robot.
Yes.
Who does Clint Eastwood impressions.
Oh, really?
So the whole time he's talking like Clint Eastwood. It's really stupid.
I have to watch just this episode.
Yes, you do just have to watch this episode. It's not, and no other episodes.
So you're giving me more things to do instead of continuing to read these Puffin books.
Yes.
But basically,
I'm trying to help you.
The Sixth Doctor and his companion go to Las Vegas planet, where they land in the middle of a pterodactyl attack.
Sure.
And basically, the pterodactyl attack is the result of the other classic time lady. Not the one that traveled to the Doctor, but the evil one.
The Rani?
The Rani.
Oh, wow, they invoke the Rani.
That Rani is trying to get married to a local dude. Local rich guy, and feed off of the energy to get herself more regeneration.
Sure.
But it turns out that she has no real feelings for him, and the regenerations are powered by feelings.
Sure.
It was. I actually sped through it because I was like, please make this end as soon as possible.
There's always that interesting point where you hit with stuff where it's like, am I actually reading this because I want to read it, or is it because I am just reading it?
I have a duty to read this, but yes. I don't have to enjoy it.
So, speaking of things you do enjoy, you got some Lego.
Yes, longtime listener P500 first reminded us that that Lego actually approved a Back to the Future kit because Lego has a site called Kuso, where people can submit their own Lego designs and vote on which ones do people actually like to see made into Lego. Previous ones was actually a, can't remember the name of the solar satellite, but it was a solar satellite that got into it. The second was Minecraft. The Minecraft Lego kit only exists because of this project.
Right.
And finally, they did Back to the Future. Mm. And all proceeds go to the Michael J. Fox Foundation for Parkinson's, I gotta say, I really appreciate, I really like that all these Back to the Future things that come out all seem to go towards that, because I don't think he actually owns Back to the Future, unless somehow he bought a stake at some point in the past. Like, I feel it's really good that people are doing this, that everyone's sort of, like, they did the same thing with the Nike shoes, right? So, I think it's pretty cool that they're that something like that is
happening. I think he's so tied to the franchise that it makes sense that, like, they would, you know, kind of couple anything to do with Back to the Future to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, you're totally right though. It's like it is gratifying.
Yeah. So the kit it was going to be released like August 2nd or 1st. Mm-hmm. And the night before they actually made it available and the Lego servers crashed. So I actually managed to get through and get my order in. Some of my colleagues at work, who also like it, one of them bought two of them, and he had to wait like 3-4 weeks before they shipped the new batch. And it still has that now, where you can order it, but you have to wait a few weeks before it actually ships. But mine came right away! And it's a great little kit, because you build a DeLorean, but you can actually swap out the parts, so you can have it from the Back to the Future 1 incarnation, the number 2 incarnation.
With Mr. Fusion.
You can put the Mr. Fusion on the back. You can change the license plate, so it's the license plate for the future California, which is the barcode. You can even make the Back to the Future 3 with the red ball tires.
I appreciate that level of detail.
Yeah, they got it all going on in there. And of course, you get a Marty and a Doc. a skateboard for Marty. I gotta say though that one thing that was really nice about the whole thing, it comes with a I got a few pieces of Lego in my day. The box is reusable, not like other Lego kits. It's very much clear like they intended for this thing to be reused. And it comes with a really big, thick book of Back to the Future, like talking about Back to the Future and trivia, which is also an instruction manual, and it's just this nice, thick instruction manual. It was I can be honest and say, it's a delightful experience putting together. And if you're a fan of Lego who likes, there's always a thing with Lego where people are like, ah, it's become too commercial, it's based on certain properties. And I completely agree with that. But for some of their more detailed figures, it's really interesting how they put together, they make something look like something you already know really does exist.
Right.
So I've been playing around with some Star Wars Lego, and you're like, it's fascinating how they build the curved, Millennium Falcon. Mm-hmm. How do they pull that off? In this, it's like, wow, the front, while is not as accurate, the back is amazing with, the giant flumes that thing has on the back of it.
Yeah.
The way they pull that off is so interesting. And the tiny, they get all these tiny details right on it. So, I guess, what, 5 stars? 5 timey-wimey ups?
Whatever. Thumbs up.
Whatever our rating system here is on our show, this gets the highest one, in my opinion. It's a fun thing. I have some pictures I took of my completed one. It's pretty cool.
Well, I am glad to hear that Lego came through for you.
Lego came through.
Yay!
Always bet on Lego.
So I think that's pretty much it's we're kind of in the off season, we're catching up with stuff, but I think the last thing we have to do today is talk about the Mind Robber. So as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, we're going through all the classic Doctor Who stories. Figuring out what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
Why this show has lasted for 50 years.
Exactly.
So, Rudy, what did you think of The Mind Robber? Which stars Patrick Troughton as the Second Doctor.
So a couple things I want to get off, up front. You know, we ask people, what should we watch? And then we wanted to say, what was the easiest for us to watch as well?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, The Mind Robber is the only Second Doctor story that's easily available on Netflix and on Amazon.
Yes.
I'm sure, if we put more effort into it, yes, we could have found some other stuff out there.
I did do a quick, Second Doctor Stories search. Right. And so I found, an article that had, here are the big ones. And The Mind Robber was on that list.
Okay.
So at least, at least we watched something that people don't necessarily consider unessential.
Yeah. Yeah, so I just want to make sure that people understand that, and I don't think we should judge. The only thing we have to both be aware of is not to judge the entirety of a certain doctor's existence based on one story arc.
Well, you wouldn't judge David Tennant based on the Doctor's daughter, or
God, I hope not.
That's probably happened by at least once, but oh God. That would be sad.
That would be very sad.
But yeah, so Patrick Troughton as the Second Doctor.
Yes. So went into this having not really seen that much of him, but heard about him a lot recently. And I can understand why now, having seen that episode.
Yeah.
Overall, I left that episode what the fuck? Mm-hmm. This is the stupidest, craziest thing ever.
Spoilers for The Mind Robber. Basically, it's like fairy tales come to life, essentially.
Yeah, it's in order to escape a volcano, the Doctor's forced to use an emergency switch that takes him to an outside of reality.
Yes.
And then it ends up that it's like where fiction exists, and there's a computer brain called the Master.
Yes, but not the Master.
Who's basically a harnessed human forced to write fiction. We're not sure why, and he wants to swap in the Doctor for himself so he can go home.
Sure.
And then the Doctor saves the day. Yay!
And they all lived happily ever after.
Although we're not sure, because the episode actually ends in a kind of another cliffhanger.
Yeah. Well, that was the way they ran these things.
Yeah. So, somewhere in there, the TARDIS explodes.
Mm-hmm. Like you do.
Like it does.
But it gets back together.
It gets back together at the end. I think literally that's the last shot.
Mm-hmm.
So overall, I was just kind of
jaw dropping opens, eyes squinting, trying to follow along. Like, wait, what insanity is this?
I kind of gave up on making sense of it around the point where Jamie starts climbing up Rapunzel's braid.
Yes,
that was about the point where I was like, you know, no logic is going to apply going forward. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it was. When that occurred, and then it's people's reaction, there was a point, like, shortly after that where, you know, Zoe, who is adorable.
Yeah, oh, I liked Zoe a lot.
Yeah, she's adorable, but every now and then there's some, like, oh, yes, chauvinism. I remember what that was like, where, like, they're like, oh, here's Zoe, let me throw you over the photoelectric ray. Or, like, oh, she's in a jar, let's tell her how she should be a good girl before we let her out. But there was this moment, though, where... But related to that photoelectric array, she's like, okay, as long as we don't trip this photoelectric array, we'll be fine. And then Zoe kind of has a freak out moment, like, I'm so upset about this. And like, no, Zoe, don't. And of course, she runs to the photoelectric array that brings everyone in.
Oh, Zoe.
So, yeah.
I didn't actually know anything about her, so I looked her up. I looked up the character, and actually, she's got a cool backstory. She's like a science genius from the 21st century.
The exciting future of the 21st century.
The exciting future of the 21st century, but she was like found on like a spaceship, a space station. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's just a nice reminder that, you know, and like, but of course, like, and the other companion is like a Highlander from Jamie the Highlander from the 1800s who walks around in a kilt. And it's like.
And a furry vest.
Yes, very furry vest. But it was cool. Like, I did like the reminder of how Doctor Who used to really emphasize, like, companions from.
Other times.
From other times, other places with backstories, like. It's actually is a continual reminder that they've gotten depressingly less imaginative in the modern era. Like, it's like, you know, hey, a white woman from the 21st century. Well, nowadays that's not very interesting.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's a continual.
In some ways. That's become the standard. Oh, Zoe was a template for all of
companions. It's all Zoe's fault. Let's all blame it on Zoe.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of giggled at some of the stuff when she's like, there's at some point, because the whole premise of the story is this guy can manifest fictional characters. Mm-hmm. And so one of the fictional characters is the superhero from the 21st century.
Yeah.
And like, he's a comic, what's it called? He's a cartoon strip we read in the year 2000. It's like, Caracas or something like that. And it's like, there's no such character.
But yeah, what did you think of Patrick Troughton though? Just as the Doctor.
Well, Patrick Troughton as a Doctor, I actually found I enjoyed, and I can like understand why people do refer to him. And strangely, I saw it made me go realize like, oh, Matt Smith does take a lot from his performance. Mm-hmm. There's quite a bit of Matt Smith's like kind of very friendly. Like, he's a much friendlier Doctor than the Doctor previous to him.
Yeah.
He is much more endearing and has that kind of, friendly teacher quality to
Yeah, I found, it's like, the word I found myself wanting to use is placid.
Yeah.
Which I find, and it would be interesting to see him maybe in a more, like, tense situation. I feel like this episode wasn't maybe, like, the most high stakes.
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting to see, like, what would happen if, in an episode where Patrick Troughton was pushed more to, the Doctor's dark side.
Right.
But still, it was, like, I did enjoy him. Like, I don't know if anyone really says, like, oh yeah, Patrick Troughton's my Doctor. Certainly those people exist, probably,
I think Neil Gaiman has said it in the past.
Really?
That was his Doctor.
Huh.
Being that, like, you know, him being of an age where that would have been his Doctor.
Maybe I didn't realize he was that old.
But also, like, tied to that is, again, like, yes, I think why he enjoys writing Matt Smith's Doctor, because Matt Smith's Doctor has that kind of, you know, kind of crazy, you know, like, kind of distracted. Like, that's the biggest thing. Matt Smith's Doctor has the same kind of distracted quality that this Doctor has. It has a tendency to, like, think in his head and then realize, oh, I should do this. Though far more manic in Matt Smith's case.
Yeah.
But, yeah. And they both have bow ties.
They both have bow ties.
There you go.
But Matt Smith has much better hair.
Yes, that is true.
Oh, gosh, that hair.
That hair.
That hair was... Patrick Troughton, I'm so sorry about the 1970s.
But, I mean, he was...
Or like, 60s, actually.
Watching this, he was by far the best actor in it, and the most charming character. And
but he didn't have a big, a sparkly a jumpsuit the way that Zoe did.
Well, Zoe was also very, like very interesting to see. Please take away Jamie. Like, and I can't actually believe that Jamie apparently exists throughout the entire second Doctor's run.
Yeah, he is held up as a very dear companion to the Doctor.
And I can't imagine why is because he's constantly the one that seems to be getting them into trouble. The whole episode starts when Jamie's freaking out about the lava. And to be fair, the Doctor's like, I'm not entirely sure if the TARDIS can survive lava, but he's not that panicked about it until Jamie gets everyone all riled up about lava coming down towards them. And then so it's his fault, and it's also like. Isn't it him that's like, oh, I see Scotland outside, we should go out, and then with Zoe, he goes out, and like, he follows after being explicitly told, don't go anywhere. He's explicitly told several times, don't go to do anything.
Well, everyone knows that the Doctor's companion's primary job is to ignore the Doctor when he says, don't go anywhere.
Yes, I get that. It's just, wow, and he's always causing trouble.
I mean, you were coming down really hard on Jamie.
You know, he's annoying. I mean, like, what was the other thing? Like, oh, there's a red coat here that I like, you know, that's totally like that I'm totally angry at because he's from the Scottish Rebellion, yes. Right? And so he's going to be he's going to see that red coat. His instinct, of course, is to, of course, try to kill it right away. Except his first thing he does is leap out and go, "I'm going to kill you," he says to the red coat with the gun.
So Jamie is not so good at being, you know,
smart.
Yes. Okay. That's mean.
I understand. He's Scottish. No, I'm kidding.
Oh. Our new Doctor's Scottish, man.
I know. He's going to be great because of it. But yeah, it just had me shaking my head. And then, the storyline. I mean, to be fair, there were some moments I truly enjoyed that I thought was really, really, really keen. But overall, it was like, oh, this is when Doctor Who was a children's show. I mean, like, became a real children's show because he was like the funny uncle. Mm-hmm. I mean, even the puzzles in this, the puzzles were like,
oh god, everything about this episode screams children.
Yeah.
Like down
to, you know, Rapunzel, right?
Yeah. Like it is not the most mature of stories.
No, not at all. And plot things happen a good deal because they can. Mm-hmm. Like one was, and also a bunch of stuff, like the very first episode, I feel like it was kind of written and did not really know where the story was going. Mm-hmm. You know, at some point the white robots kind of do something to Jamie.
Why do the robots have to be white?
I'm not the one that called them white robots. They said white robots.
Fair enough.
You know, they just happen to be hardworking, moral white. Oh, no, I'm kidding.
Whoa!
Dark place there. But they do something to Jamie and Zoe where they suddenly have all white costumes. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And then that's never mentioned again.
I mean, white is slimming? I don't know.
I don't know either! But never talked about.
Never. No, let us never speak of it again.
Yeah. So, anyway, that was my biggest takeaway was, like, wow, this is a kid's show. Mm-hmm. You know, I could totally see why kids kind of follow along with it. I found Patrick Troughton very charming. One thing I did like was when the TARDIS blew apart, it was kind of cool, the image of the console float, like spinning in space, like mm-hmm. with just Zoe and Jamie, you know, flashed onto it. Then they cut away. Well, one, she points at the Doctor and screams. When I don't know why she's screaming.
Because she's a woman on Doctor Who.
Yeah, exactly. And then you see that kind of strange. Clearly, it's Troughton on a chair spinning around. That's meant to indicate that he's floating in space. But
special effects.
Yay!
The most special of effects.
I love the trees. I love Jamie climbing up the tree.
Yeah.
Oh, that turned out to be letters, but it's like, oh, I'm totally giving you a boost. Ignore the ladder that's clearly behind here that you're climbing up from.
Oh, no. It was like, what, 67?
Yeah.
Yeah, they did their best.
I understand that.
Pat them on the head. For me, the most shocking bit was just the fact that at the credits credit Patrick Troughton as Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Completely misspelled with the DR period, which always bugs me. I've literally gone into articles like written that I've been working on and been like, I'm fixing this. This is incorrect.
The doctor.
Yes. Oh gosh. The sentences I have rewritten to make sure that I can refer to the actor playing the doctor as the doctor. On Doctor Who.
On Doctor Who.
Because it bothers me. But anyways, so I guess next up is John Pertwee.
Yes.
And
literally it's, when you finish that episode on Netflix, literally next up is John Pertwee.
Yes, because it's, that is the only second Doctor adventure available.
Yes.
I don't know what we're gonna watch for him.
I think this time we should see what's available and put it out there for people to pick.
Yeah, like, I think that'd be a good idea. Yeah. Like, I feel like John Pertwee, we're gonna have a little more flexibility. So that...
I think they actually have his very first episode.
Okay.
Which is the one that a lot of people said really helped kick Doctor Who. Well, one made him a bit more frightening and scary and back to... is the first color one.
Oh, okay. I just want to see him do some Venusian Aikido. I know that's a thing that happens in the third Doctor era.
One other thing I liked in this episode we saw was that point where she was fighting the superhero. Oh,
yeah.
Where she kept flipping the guy over her shoulder, but screaming out, lesson 31! Lesson 47! And I'm like, I don't know what you're saying.
She knows that she's doing her martial arts. That's what she does.
But whatever it is, you are awesome.
Ah, Zoe. I'm definitely on pro Zoe person.
I'm on Team Zoe.
Yeah.
I am totally not on Team Jamie.
Aw. But he did his best.
Oh, wait, another shout out. I'm sorry, all these things are. I just reminded, how cool was it when the doctor does not correctly put his face together?
Oh, yes.
And they have a different actor?
Well, that was good. Yeah, apparently, like, the original actor got chicken pox or something.
Yeah, I know. I'm like. I kind of like that. It's like, here, it has some chicken pox.
Yeah, that's that. Do you feel... Did you prefer one Jamie actor over the other?
No.
You're just done.
I'm just done with Jamie. It was even better. Like, yeah. But that was, again, another bit that I was like, oh, this is very much a kid's show, where it's like, his face was changed. And everyone's reactions to stuff was very much like, oh, I see how this works.
Yeah.
You all know Medusa, don't you?
Watch out for Medusa.
Yeah. The mentor.
Yes. We all learned a lot.
And I was surprised. I'm kind of wondering if there was any callbacks to that Minotaur from the Minotaur that we saw with Matt Smith.
Oh, I doubt it.
Probably not. But anyway.
It was at least interesting to check out Patrick Troughton's time.
Yeah.
John Pertwee up next. We'll figure out what we're going to be watching for that with your help, hopefully.
Yes.
And I think that's all we got for today.
That's all we got.
Yeah. So as always, you can find us on Twitter at TimeyWimeyTV. You can find us on Facebook at Facebook.com/TimeyWimeyTV. You can find us on Tumblr at TimeyWimeyTV.tumblr.com. You can find us on Google Plus by searching for us on Google Plus. And you can email us at feedback@timeywimey.tv or find us on our website at timeywimey.tv.
And you can subscribe to us through our RSS feed on our website.
Yes.
Or via iTunes or via Stitcher.
Yes, you can do all of those things.
You should do all those things.
You should do all those things. You should subscribe to us on every possible means.
Yes.
And
play us on loop. Forever.
Forever and ever.
Or promise to do so at our 100th anniversary.
Yes, do or that. When we're coming up on 100 episodes, we can say that it's felt like 100 years.
Felt like 100 years.
Remember,
on our last anniversary, we went back in time.
Oh, yeah?
This, I think we should go to the future.
We should go to the future.
Yes.
Where I'm married to Rex Matheson, CIA.
We can make it happen.
Oh, yeah. Miracle Day is going to be on BBC America real soon.
That's right. So you all can experience the joy.
The joy. Unbridled joy.
That is Rex Matheson, CIA.
Yes.
And the giant earth vagina.
Oh, giant earth vagina. I wonder if they can even show that on BBC America. Anyways, that's our show. Thank you so much for listening and have a timey-wimey time.
See you next time. Bye.
Bye.